Good morning. Thank you very much. Thank you, John, for giving me an opportunity to share. You know, our theme is Proverbs 3, 5, and 6. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not into your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him and he shall direct your paths. And I'm going to focus on verse 5. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not into your own understanding. This is a great verse. I love it. I've been thinking a lot about it for several weeks now. And one of the things I like is that it's a really simple but powerful verse, and it gives you a really easy way to speak God's word to other people. My wife's father's been sick, he'd been in the hospital, and 3 weeks, came out thin as a rail, and now he's in a nursing home, and but he's getting better thanks to your prayers. But what I really like is the other day I went to see him, and he's laying in his bed, you know. Yeah. And he's lost like 50 pounds. And so I said, Steve, that's his name, you look like shit. But I'm trusting God with all my heart that you're going to get better. And he opened his eyes, and he looked at me, and he smiled. And he said, thank you, Bart. You know, so it's really great, you know, that we can do that. You know, we can give people the word and give them hope. But trusting in the Lord, I'm only going to share 3 verses on that part of it. You can look at Matthew 11, verse 25. Matthew 11, verse 25. Jesus had been through a pretty hard time, and he takes a break. And he prays to God. And Jesus, it says, at that time Jesus answered and said, I thank thee, O Father, Lord of heaven and earth. I just love that. Jesus Christ knew God was his Father, and he calls him Lord of heaven and earth. Lord is the word kurios, which it means supreme in authority and power. That's why we should trust God. He is supreme in authority and power. There's none greater than God. So that's a good reason to trust him. Another one is in Numbers 23. Numbers 23, verse 19. Another great reason why we should trust God. This is incredible to me. It says in Numbers 23, 19, God is not a man that he should lie, neither the son of man that he should repent or change. Hath he said, and shall he not do it? Or hath he spoken, and shall he not make it good? What a tremendous verse. God's not going to lie to us. He doesn't change. Everything he says he's going to do, he's going to do. And everything he says I'm going to make good, he's going to make good. So be pretty smart for us to trust him, right? That's what I think. And then one more in Deuteronomy 7, verse 9. God is faithful, and that is so important. It says in Deuteronomy 7, 9, know therefore that the Lord thy God, he is God, the faithful God, which keepeth covenant and mercy with them that love him and keep his commandments to 1,000 generations. So those are just 3 simple reasons, you know, why we should trust God. He's supreme in authority and power. He doesn't lie. Everything he says is going to come to pass, and he's faithful, you know. So I just like that. Most of my time with you today, I want to talk about the second part of that verse, and that is lean not into your own understanding, you know. And I was thinking about that, you know, why are we so prone, you know, to lean into our own understanding, you know. We're going to look at the life of David a little bit. I want to go to 1 Samuel 16. You know, when we lean on our own understanding, we make mistakes. It causes doubt, worry, and fear. That's not what you want in your life. So, you know, we want to trust God with all our heart. And we're going to look at David. I just love this record. I'm going to go to 1 Samuel 16, and I just want to read a little bit here. It says, the context is what happened is Saul was the king of Israel, but Saul, I told my fellowship, he went bad. And so they got to replace him, you know. They got to replace him. God wants to replace Saul. And so he gives Samuel a job. 1 Samuel 16:1. And the Lord said unto Samuel, how long will you mourn for Saul, seeing I have rejected him from reigning over Israel? Fill your horn with oil and go, and I will send thee to Jesse the Bethlehemite, for I have provided me a king among his sons. So Samuel is very obedient. He says, Samuel says, how can I go? If Saul hear it, he will kill me. And the Lord said, take a heifer with thee and say, I am come to sacrifice to the Lord. And call Jesse to the sacrifice, and I will show thee what thou shalt do, and thou shalt anoint unto me him whom I name unto thee. And Samuel did it. He did that which the Lord spoke and came to Bethlehem. And the elders of the town trembled at his coming and said, comest thou peaceably? And he said, peaceably. I'm come to sacrifice unto the Lord. Sanctify yourselves and come with me to the sacrifice. And he sanctified Jesse and his sons and called them to the sacrifice. And it came to pass when they were come that he, Samuel, looked on Eliab and said, surely the Lord's anointed is before him. You know, he's leaning on his own understanding here, because Eliab was the firstborn. He must have been a pretty tall dude. But God reproved, you know, he didn't reprove him, but God set him straight. He stopped him from leaning on his own understanding, because it says in the next verse, but the Lord said unto Samuel, look not on his countenance or on the height of his stature, because I have refused him. For the Lord sees not as man sees, for man looks on the outward appearance, but the Lord looks on the heart. I think that's the main reason that we lean on our own understanding, is because we don't see like God. You know, we look at things in the physical realm. You know, we look on the outward appearance and things like that. We need to learn to see how God sees. Does that make sense? You know, it says, man looks on the outward appearance, but the Lord looks on the heart. Then Jesse, it goes on, Jesse called Abinadab and made him pass before Samuel, and he said, neither hath the Lord chosen this. Then Samuel made Shammah to pass by, and he said, neither hath the Lord chosen this. Again, Jesse made seven of his sons to pass before Samuel, and Samuel said unto Jesse, the Lord hath not chosen these. And Samuel said unto Jesse, are here all thy children? And he said, there remaineth yet the youngest, and behold, he keepeth the sheep. And Samuel said unto Jesse, send and fetch him, for we will not sit down till he come. And he sent and brought him in. He brought in David, and it says, now he was ruddy. I looked that word up. Ruddy means, from the Hebrew, red. You know, he had a healthy complexion. You ladies would say he had lots of color. You know, he was red. You know, he was healthy looking. He was a good looking kid with all of a beautiful countenance and goodly to look to. And the Lord said, arise, anoint him, for this is he. And Samuel took the horn of oil, anointed him in the midst of the brethren, and the Spirit of the Lord came upon David from that day forward. So that's how David, you know, got to be anointed the next king. But I read all that just to show you that, you know, the Lord doesn't look on the outward appearance. You know, he looks on the heart. David must have had, you know, a tremendous heart. Now we're going to go to the next chapter, and I'm going to share a little with you. This is the one everybody loves. It's David versus Goliath. But I'm going to tell you, there's a lot more people involved than just David and Goliath. There's the Philistine army. There's Goliath. There's the Israel army. There's Saul. There's David's own brothers are there. You know, they're in the midst of this. And then there's David. Out of all those thousands of people, only one trusted God, you know, with all his heart and didn't lean on his own understanding. And guess who that was? David. I just love that. So let's read a little bit. It says, now the Philistines gathered together their armies to battle and were gathered together at Shochah, which belonged to Judah, and pitched between Shochah and Azekah in Ephesidam. And Saul and the men of Israel were gathered together and pitched in the valley of Elah and set the battle in array against the Philistines. Verse 3 is cool. The Philistines stood on a mountain on the one side, and Israel stood on a mountain on the other side, and there was a valley between them. The mountains there are not like the ones in Colorado. They're not 14,000 footers. They're only like 3,000 foot on the average. So you got this, we would call it a hill over here, a valley over here, and a hill over here. Philistines over here, Israel over here. It's kind of cool. I want to try to make this live for you a little bit, okay? Because I always thought, how could these guys be standing on a 14,000-foot tall mountain? It doesn't make sense, you know? But that's the way it is. And then there went out a champion out of the camp of the Philistines named Goliath of Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. Dakota, could you come up here a minute? Dakota's a pretty big dude. I think he's the biggest dude in the room now. But let's see. That's about 6'2", maybe. Okay, now hold this for a second. Goliath was six, let's turn it around this way. Sit it on the floor. Goliath was, you'll have to read it, yes. 6 cubits in a span, which is, in our understanding, 9'6" tall. Is that about it?
Yeah, there's 9'5", I see.
All right. So if Goliath was in this room, his head would almost be touching the ceiling. I just wanted to show you that. Thank you. All right. So he was a big dude, right? But that's not all. It says, and he had a helmet of brass upon his head, and he was armed with a coat of mail. And the weight of the coat was 5,000 shekels of brass. I looked that up. That's approximately 182 pounds. That would be like me hanging on his back, you know. And he had greaves of brass, that's armor of brass upon his legs, and a target of brass between his shoulders. And the staff of his spear was like a weaver's beam, probably about like that big around. That was just the staff. And the spearhead weighed 600 shekels of iron. I looked that up. That is 16 pounds. Just his spearhead weighed 16 pounds. That's the same size that the shot putters use in the Olympics. Did you throw the shot put?
Yeah, I did.
16 pounds. So he was quite a guy, this Goliath. And then it goes on. He stood and cried unto the armies of Israel and said unto them, "Why are you come out to set your battle in array? Am not I a Philistine and you the servants to Saul? Choose you a man for you, and let him come down to me. And if he be able to fight with me and to kill me, then we will be your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then shall you be our servants and serve us." And the Philistine said, "I defy the armies of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together." When Saul and all Israel heard those words of the Philistines, they were what? Dismayed and greatly afraid. Whenever you lean on your own understanding, that's what can happen. I mean, I wouldn't want to fight that guy, you know. Now, David was the son of that, and then we get back to David. David was the son of that Ephrathite of Bethlehem, Judah, whose name was Jesse. And he had 8 sons, and the man went among men for an old man in the days of Saul. And then we'll get to his sons. You know, his 3 eldest sons were in the battlefield. It gives you their names, Eliab, Abinadab, and Shammah. Then it says in verse 14, and David was the youngest, and the 3 eldest followed Saul. Now we get to David. But David went and returned from Saul to feed his father's sheep at Bethlehem. And then we get into this whole situation. That Philistine, Goliath, the guy that was 9 feet 6 inches tall, he drew near morning and evening and presented himself 40 days. Can you imagine having to look at that for 40 days? You know, I would imagine the fear and the anxiety would just keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger, you know. And Jesse said unto David his son, "Take now for thy brethren an ephah of this parched corn," that's 20 quarts, or like Heidi says, 5 gallons. Take your brothers 5 gallons of corn and these 10 loaves and run to the camp to thy brethren and carry these 10 cheeses unto the captain of the thousands. Army's got to eat, right? And look and see how they're doing is what he's basically doing. So David did what his dad said. You know, he rose up in the morning, left the sheep. He took and went as Jesse had commanded him. He went to the trench as, you know, they were getting ready to fight. And then it says in verse 21, Israel and the Philistines had put the battle in array, army against army. And David left his carriage in the hands of the keeper of the carriage and ran into the army and came and saluted his brethren. And then Goliath shows up again and says he talked with them, and there came up the champion, the Philistine of Gath, Goliath by name, out of the armies of the Philistines, and spake according to the same words, and David heard them. And all the men of Israel, when they saw the man, they just fled from him. They were sore afraid. And go to verse 26. It says, and David spoke to the men that stood by him, saying, "What shall be done to the man that killeth this Philistine and take away the reproach from Israel?" You know, I really like what he says here. It says, "For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy not the army of Israel, but the army of the living God?" You see that? David is seeing things a lot different. you know, Goliath is not defying the army of Israel. He's defying the armies of the living God. He's looking at things like God looks at things, you know. That's the point. And the people answered him after this manner, saying, "Oh, so shall it be done to the man that kills him." And then, verse 28, David's own brother is giving him a hard time, you know, for showing up there. We'll get on with the story. And then David said in verse 29, "What have I now done? Is there not a cause?" And then he turned from him toward another and spake after the same manner, and the people answered him again. And then the great thing is that David kept telling him, you know, this guy, he's not gonna make it, Goliath. And he said, when the words were heard which David spoke, they rehearsed them before Saul, and he sent for him. And then David, he has to make his case to Saul, because Saul's the king, and he's got to get permission from Saul to go fight Goliath. You know, he just can't run out there and do it himself. So David said to Saul, "Let no man's heart fail because of him. Thy servant will go and fight with this Philistine." Then here's Saul's response. And Saul said to David, "You're not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, but you are but a youth, and he a man of war from his youth." What's Saul doing right here? He's leaning on his own understanding, no doubt. He said to David, "You are but a youth." I brought a picture of a youth. That's me when I was a youth, you know. But David, he was a youth. He was young. I don't know how old he was. I don't think anybody really knows. But we know he was young. And Saul later on calls him a stripling. You know what a stripling is? It comes from the Hebrew word meaning strip. You know, it's like that. He must not have been, you know, a huge guy. He was just a youth, you know. And David has to convince Saul to let him go. And it says, "And David said unto Saul, Thy servant kept his father's sheep, and there came a lion and a bear, and took a lamb out of the flock. And I went after him and smote him and delivered it out of his mouth. And when he arose against me, I caught him by his beard and smote him and slew him. Thy servant slew both the lion and the bear." And then it's really great. "And this uncircumcised Philistine shall be as one of them, seeing he has defied the armies of the living God." That's, and he adds to it. David said, "Moreover, the Lord that delivered me out of the paw of the lion and out of the paw of the bear, he will deliver me out of the hand of this." Who's getting the glory and the credit here? You know, it's God. Well, it worked, you know. He said, "God's going to deliver me." He was trusting God. That's the point. And then Saul said, "Well, okay, go." You know. And then you know a lot about what happened. David, you know, Saul gave David his armor, but David was just... Saul was also a big guy. Saul was probably he was probably bigger than Dakota, but he wasn't as big as Goliath, you know. But David couldn't wear his armor. You know, he couldn't, it didn't fit. So what does David do? He does what God tells him to do. And, you know, it says in verse 40, he took his staff in his hand and chose him five smooth stones out of the brook put them in a shepherd's bag, which he had even in a scrip, and a sling was in his hand, and he drew near to the Philistine. Verse 42 says, and when the Philistine looked about and saw David, he disdained him, for he was but a youth and ruddy and of a fair countenance. This Philistine was real mouthy, and he said unto David, am I a dog? am I a dog that thou comest to me with staves? Staves are sticks. And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. The Philistine said to David, come to me, and I will give thy flesh unto the fowls of the air and to the beasts of the field. Then I love David's response. It says, then said David to the Philistine, you come to me with a sword and with a spear and with a shield, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defiled. And then he goes on to say, this day will the Lord deliver me into thine hand, and I will smite thee and take thine head from thee, and I will give the carcasses of the host of the Philistines this day unto the fowls of the air and to the wild beasts of the earth. And the reason all that's going to happen is that all the earth may know that there's a God in Israel. To me, that is fantastic. In verse 47, and all this assembly shall know that the Lord saves not with sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands. It's just such a great record, his trust in God, you know, and he didn't lean on his own understanding. He wasn't afraid of Goliath at all. So we might as well finish it. It came to pass when the Philistine arose and came and drew near to meet David, that David hasted and ran toward the army to meet the Philistine. And David put his hand in his bag. He took thence a stone and slung it and smote the Philistine in his forehead, that the stone sunk into his forehead, and he fell upon his face to the earth. Bigger they are, the harder they fall, right? So David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and with a stone, and smote the Philistine and slew him. But there was no sword in the hand of David. Therefore David ran, stood upon the Philistine, took his sword, drew it out of the sheath thereof, and slew him, and cut off his head therewith. And when the Philistines saw that their champion was dead, they fled. You know, I just love this record. You know, do you see how much of it is how David was trusting God, you know, with all his heart, and he wasn't leaning on his own understanding? You know, Goliath could have been 20 foot tall. He probably wouldn't have bothered him at all. So I guess the question I have, or what I want to finish with, is you know, how do you get a heart like David? You know, how do you get that confidence and trust in God, you know, like David? That's what we want, right? I was thinking about it, you know, and David was a prophet, and he wrote a lot of Psalms, and he was inspired by God to write them. He wrote these Psalms, and if you read the Psalms that he wrote, you know, you'll see what was going on in his head, you know, what was going on in his heart. You know, definitely God worked with him tremendously, but David also had to put forth, you know, a lot of effort, you know. And I just want to show you just a few of them. This is how David got his confidence and trust. In Psalm 34, we can look at that one. In Psalm 34, this is David. It's written, it's God's word, but it's referring to David. I, David, sought the Lord, and he heard me and delivered me from all my fears. You know, he sought the Lord. He put forth effort, you know, to get to know God. Verse 6 is not bad either. This poor man, referring to himself, cried, and the Lord heard him and saved him out of all his troubles. Verse 7, I like. This is a good one for all of us to know. The angel of the Lord encamps round about them that fear him and deliver them. These are some of the things that David had in his heart. That's what gave him such great courage. Psalm 16:8. Again, this is a psalm of David. He said, I, David, have set the Lord always before me, because he is at my right hand. I shall not be moved. You know, he really set his heart on God. Psalm 119, we'll take a look at that one. Psalm 119, verse 97. This says, it's really beautiful. It says, oh, how I love thy law. It is my meditation all the day. Can you imagine? You know, David loved God and he loved his word and he meditated on it all the day. Thou through thy commandments has made me wiser than my enemies, for they are ever with me. He needed that. He said, I have more understanding than all my teachers. How's that possible? For thy testimonies are my meditation. You know, if you think about God and his word enough, he's going to teach you. You know, you're going to get it. Verse 100, I understand more than all the ancients because I keep thy precepts. And verse 104 says, through thy precepts I get understanding. He gets God's understanding. Therefore I hate every false way. I got one more thing to close with. Psalm 63, I stumbled across this one and I really liked it. Psalm 63. I think this tells you what you need to do if you really want to build your trust in God. Psalm 63, 1. O God, thou art my God. Early will I seek thee. My soul thirsts for thee. My flesh longs for thee in a dry and thirsty land where no water is. To see thy power and thy glory. So as I have seen thee in the sanctuary. And then it says, because he knew your loving kindness is better than life, my lips shall praise thee. Thus will I bless thee while I live. I will lift up my hands in thy name. My soul shall be satisfied as with marrow and fatness, and my mouth shall praise thee with joyful lips. Verse 6, when I remember you upon my bed and meditate on you in the night watches. He spent a lot of time thinking about God, meditating, you know, on God. Verse 7, because thou hast been my help, Therefore, in the shadow of your wings will I rejoice. Verse 8 is great. My soul followeth hard after thee. He gave it all he had. You know, he didn't just mess around. My soul followeth hard after thee. Your right hand holds me up. I just thought those were some really good keys. You know, if you really want to have trust in God, you know, I spent quite a bit of time looking at Psalm 119 and the word heart. I studied everywhere in the Psalm 119 where the word heart is. It's used about 15 times. So it's a big, big subject in Psalms. And also I looked at meditation a lot. You know, what is it to meditate? Think deeply about it. And we, you know, you can choose to meditate on the things of the world, and that'll get you to lean into your own understanding and be full of doubt, worry, and fear, you know. Or you can choose to meditate on God and the things of God. It's going to give you tremendous, you know, confidence and trust, you know, in God. All right, thanks.
Thank you, Mark.
You're welcome.